the end of the petitions for appeal for today. Next case is George Norris Jr. versus ETEC Mechanical Corporation. And I'll just repeat for counsel, I think you all know this, but each side gets 15 minutes to argue, and appellant has the right to rebuttal. So would you like to reserve, Mr. Carr, a portion of that 15 minutes for rebuttal?
4 minutes, Judge.
4 minutes? All right, well, let's let everybody get in the courtroom, and then you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bill Carr, and it's my pleasure to represent Mr. Norris in this matter. The sole issue before this court is whether or not Mr. Norris sustained an injury that arose out of the course of his employment. It's been conceded that his injury occurred during his employment, but the issue is whether or not it arose out of the course of his employment.
Well, Mr. Carr, let me ask you about that, because you've very graciously focused, I think, this very narrow issue. Your client, unless I'm missing something, the basic evidence that the commission had to rely on was your client's testimony that he dozed off before hitting this tree, and that it had happened before. He gets tired in the evening, sometimes more so than others. It's just fighting sleep, and never. I mean, there's no indication he was working a double shift or there's any nexus to the employment other than he's driving a company truck, I gather, home at the end of his shift. Am I missing something? Did the commission have any more than that?
Judge, what I would argue to that is he was in the course of his employment. There was some distance between where he was working, I believe in Northside, Virginia, and his house in Powhatan. And yes, that is what he testified to. However, as I tried to make clear with the commission and now, is that a typical day can still be a strenuous day. And I believe it's detailed what he did. I think it's in the record what he was doing that day.
He didn't testify, and there's no evidence at all as to characterizing that as to whether that was an atypical day or a typical day.
Well, I believe he said that it was a fairly typical day for him. But still, it was a strenuous day nonetheless. I believe it's in the record what he did. He works with HVAC.
He mentioned he was up and down the ladder many times.
Well, it's heavy work. But the point I'm trying to make is that this is an accident, that it is an actual risk of his employment. Falling asleep while driving a vehicle is an actual risk.
He was only 200 yards from his home.
Yes, Judge.
So he's essentially commuting, right? But he's in a company truck.
He's in a company vehicle, and a co-worker had left his vehicle at Mr. Norris's house. He was driving the co-worker and himself to the workplace and then back. So, as I said, there's no issue that this was during the course of his employment. It's whether it arose out of the course of his employment. And I believe the factual determination was that we know the cause of this accident. The cause of this accident is that he fell asleep. So this is not some sort of unexplained accident. There are numerous court decisions, numerous precedent that an accident does have to be explained. For example, this would be different from an accident in which a worker is going downstairs and trips, does not know why he or she tripped, cannot allege anything defective with the steps. And that's why later I am arguing that I'm not asking that the court obliterate or subsume arising out of into in the course of employment.
We can't do that. I mean, the statute definitely bifurcates the two. So,
but I'm anticipating the argument that what I'm advancing or arguing is exactly that.
Well, I think, I guess the concern we all have is that, the legislature has clearly placed both requirements on.
Yes, Judge.
And we don't want one to subsume the other because that defeats the legislative purpose. So unless someone can point to a specific nexus between the injury And the employee, as you correctly point out, everybody concedes this happened during employment, during the employment period, even though he's on his way home at the end of the day. He's driving a company car and so forth. But in terms of arising out of the employment, there has to be a nexus shown. And unless we don't want a situation where it becomes a de facto, well, if you ever get in an accident on your way home, that automatically satisfies both criteria in the absence of any other evidence. So, he testified the way he did. Typical day, this has happened to me before. He points to nothing specific with respect to the job. For all we can discern from this record, he suffers from an illness of some sort I don't know what the medical term for sleeping sickness is, but I've known people that tend to nod off at odd times. I'm not a physician, obviously, but whether that's really, there needs to be a nexus clearly in the case law between the accident and the employment, other than that it just arose during the employment period.
Yes, Judge, and I understand your concern, but there's no evidence that he suffered from some sort of...
But how would we draw, how would we write an opinion that makes that distinction without swallowing up the second part of the test?
Well, there's case law that says that evidence concerning whether someone was injured in the course of employment also will inform whether or not an injury arose out of the course of employment. And I think this is one of those situations. He was driving, he had to drive, and he fell asleep. Falling asleep while driving, it's a risk of driving.
But is it a risk of employment?
It's also the risk of the employment. He had to drive to and from the work site, and he was carrying a passenger.
So if I'm the employee and I stay up all night playing poker and drinking the night before and bleary-eyed, I go to my job, finish my shift, and get into an accident on the way home in a situation like this, the employer's got to cover all that because it happened in the course and arose out of my employment.
No, Judge, and those are not the facts.
No, they're not the facts in this case, but how do we, there's no nexus there either between...
Judge, unfortunately, as been stated in many cases, and in cases from this court, these are very factually based opinions, and they are difficult decisions. But the facts of this case are that he was driving back from work, he had a co-worker, he was in the course of his employment. And also I think Commissioner Marshall made an excellent point that there's no question that if his passenger made a workers' compensation claim, that would be compensable. Indeed, he would be comp barred if he tried to go after Mr. Norris personally. He would be an accident arising during the course and out of the course of his employment. So I think I suggest respectfully, there's some inconsistency in results, and that it's really not in keeping with the remedial aspect of the Workers' Compensation Act that Mr. Norris should be excluded from a workers' compensation claim. But as I said, I'm not arguing to obliterate the distinction between arising out of and in the course of. I'm saying in this particular case that he's met his burden of proof that the accident happened and arose out of the course of his employment.
Is tiredness or fatigue a hazard of the street?
I think... To take your question further, I think what you're asking me to anticipate is, am I arguing that this is just something we're all exposed to? Was this something particular to his employment? And I believe the case law is that even though a risk may be common to all, that does not exclude whether or not the injury arose out of the course of employment. So I would argue that we know he fell asleep. I don't think there's any question about that. And we can argue about why he was tired, but we know he was tired, and that's a risk of the employment.
So that would really be a risk of almost any employment if you work a long day, I suppose. I mean, his job is very physical. It involves a lot of physically demanding activity. But I sort of anticipated that you were going to talk more about he was driving a company vehicle and he was chauffeuring
we know that. I mean, he was driving, he was carrying a coworker. All of that has been conceded. This is just strictly he wrote that this incident arise out of the course of employment. I was trying to get to the point, as Judge Humphreys mentioned, you know, I didn't want to belabor the issue that all of that's been conceded, that he was in the course of his employment at the time. He was driving from a job site, I believe in Northern Virginia, to his home in Powhatan. He had a co-worker. He had to get the co-worker back to his house so that co-worker could pick up his own car to leave.
Commissioner Marshall has said largely on the street risk doctrine, which, of course, was never argued or briefed by you at the commission level. What's your position with respect to that?
I believe the street cases are a subset of actual risk cases. I mean, that would be my approach to it. I mean, it could be, they're not mutually exclusive. It's an actual risk. It's a risk of the street.
But that's his own negligence, not that of somebody, not the typical street risk where you're worried about somebody running a stop sign or a red light and hitting you.
Well, exactly. There's no indication here that this was caused by someone else's negligence. I mean, this was what happened to him. He fell asleep.
And, of course, under the street risk doctrine, the second component of that test is whether the injury arose from an actual risk that, in this case, his presence on that particular street at that particular time.
Well, it's fairly broad. I mean, he was in a vehicle. He was on the job. He fell asleep, and he injured himself.
But, I mean in the case of an actual risk test, I guess to put it crudely, I guess there needs to be a nexus between his presence on the street and the actual risk that caused the accident, in this case, his falling asleep. So what is it about, I guess, the driving down the street on his way home 200 yards from his house that, you know, formed an actual risk that would necessitate compensation under these circumstances?
The actual risk is that he fell asleep while driving a vehicle.
You're not arguing circular reasoning, but it sounds a lot that way to me, I guess.
Yes, Judge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have your rebuttal time?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Esther King on behalf of the appellees.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Sure. Judge Humphreys, you've hit on our exact argument, is that there is no nexus between the employment and the injury. It's our position that the appellant did not prove that the accident arose out of employment.
Would your position be different if he'd said, I just finished a double shift?
It could be, Your Honor. It's our argument that it is the nexus that's missing. If he had attributed his tiredness to being overworked, and that would need to be factually supported.
Or I just finished a particularly tough job where I had, as Judge Veals put it, I had to go up and down the ladder twice as many times as I might normally have.
If the factual circumstances fit, the commission has actually held that. An employee had to travel a long distance, stay up late at night, get up early, and the commission actually did hold that there was compensability in that case. So it's certainly possible if the factual scenario is appropriate. We would argue that we don't have that here. The claimant did not attribute his tiredness to being overworked. He didn't attribute it to anything. In fact, those are factual findings that we believe are binding on this court, contained in Commissioner Newman's opinion, that the appellant testified that it was a normal week. He had not been on call. He did not attribute his tiredness to any strenuous activity at work. In fact, he didn't know why he fell asleep. And we believe, Your Honor's case, the Liberty Mutual versus Herndon case is particularly instructive here in that the court's focus is not on the cause and the accident, but rather the accident and a risk of employment. In Herndon, the deputy commissioner originally denied that case as an unexplained fall. But the commission and the Court of Appeals ultimately held that there was enough factual evidence to infer that fall did arise out of employment. Commissioner Newman held, there was no evidence to find the critical link, and there was not even enough evidence to make an inference that this was causally related. Your Honor's raised the street risk doctrine.
Well, Commissioner Marshall really raised it, but you might want to address it, too, I guess.
As Your Honor mentioned, it's our position that the appellant did not raise that argument to the commission and that it is waived for argument's sake.
Suppose we don't agree with that. Suppose we adopt your opponent's argument that it's sort of subsumed within his assignment of error. How would you respond on the merits to that?
For argument's sake, if you were to accept that it was not waived, what the street risk doctrine changes is only that it removes the defense's ability to argue that the risk was not common to the neighborhood. It does not remove the requirement that you still need to link the accident to an actual risk of the street. So it's our position that it's really only an evidentiary burden that's shifted, but not that the link doesn't need to be proven. In this case, there is no link. It boils down to the critical link is missing. The causation is missing. As far as the street risk is concerned, Commissioner Marshall and the appellant adopted Commissioner Marshall's dissent, indicated that falling asleep is a universally known hazard of driving. For it to be a universally known hazard, it would need to be universally accepted, and Deputy Commissioner Hunter did not accept that, and Commissioner Newman explicitly rejected it and stated that falling asleep was not actually a risk of driving a car. Even if you were to presume falling asleep is a risk of driving a car, we again boil right back to the fact that it may very well be a risk of driving a car, but it's not linked to the employment. And Your Honor's example of staying up all night and playing poker is the exact reason why, because the employer would then be responsible for all of those risks.
Can I ask you on that,
yes,
follow up on Judge Humphrey's question and the point you just made?
Yes.
Suppose, and I gather this is what Mr. Carr is arguing, that this was essentially a really strenuous day. He's up and down the ladder many times. He's carrying very heavy equipment, which requires two men to lift. He does this 8 hours or more that day. And then he has to drive back from Northern Virginia to Powhatan, and he's in a company vehicle. That's a pretty long commute, in a lot of traffic, more than likely. And after a day of considerable physical exertion, is it your argument that neither the commute nor the company vehicle nor the many trips up and down the ladder and the lifting the heavy HVAC equipment,
that none of that is abnormal for his day? It was just a typical day.
Your Honor, I think first and foremost, I believe the facts were that he was driving from Richmond. I don't believe it was Northern Virginia. So I don't believe there was a long commute, and the claimant never indicated there was a long commute. That may be every day for him that he's up and down the ladder 8 hours a day. That could be a normal day, and in fact, that is what he testified to in his deposition and at hearing. At his deposition, he testified that it was a normal day. It wasn't that bad, actually, was his language. So the very fact that it may be a strenuous job, there are lots of workers who have strenuous jobs every single day, but that does not per se mean they're going to get in their car and fall asleep on the way home. And again, as I indicated to Judge Humphreys, the facts could support that. We don't have that in this case, and the claimant never at any time attributed his tiredness to the strenuous job. And the job that he has probably is strenuous every day. There are a lot of those jobs, but without that link, it's our position that you can't get there. In fact, we would argue that Pinkerton's controls this case and that there can be no presumption without evidence to support and prove the critical link. The appellant cannot meet his burden. In Pinkerton's...
Because it would essentially flip the burden of proof, wouldn't it?
Correct, Your Honor. And that happened in Pinkerton's. The Court of Appeals held that, this court held, an unexplained accident was entitled to a presumption because there was no evidence to show that it wasn't work-related. And the Virginia Supreme Court took that case up and indicated that extending the presumption beyond death claims would completely change the jurisprudence and indicated that there can be no presumption other than for the appropriate death claims. So we would argue that what's missing in an unexplained case is the critical link, and that by definition an unexplained case cannot be tied to work. And that's what we argue is missing here, Your Honor, is the critical link between an actual risk of employment and this accident.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Mr. Carr, you have your rebuttal time.
Yes. Briefly. Again, this is not an accident that is unexplained. We know why the accident happened. My client fell asleep. We know that he was working that day. He was in a company vehicle. He was on his way back to his house with a coworker, and he fell asleep, and that resulted in his injuries. This was an actual risk of his employment. And as I said, there's no question that if his coworker had also been injured in this accident, that would be a compensable claim. I don't really see the distinction between one claim and not the other. Furthermore, as I said, I'm not advocating a positional risk analysis. I'm not advocating that the distinction between arising out of and during the course of employment be obliterated. I'm asking that under the facts of this particular case, that this court find that Mr. Norris's injuries are compensable. As I said, it's not unexplained. I don't believe this is going to significantly change cases in the future. There will still have to be an explanation of what happened, but I think the explanation here is right in front of us. He fell asleep, and that was in the course of his employment. My typical day...
But wouldn't it eliminate the need to establish why it happened?
I don't believe so. We fall asleep because we're tired.
But I mean, don't we have to figure out why you're tired, whether it's something inherent with the employment or because it's
something, Judge,
you may have done the day or the night before?
I understand, you just have been in a funny sleeping pattern.
That goes back to Judge Humphrey's original question.
That goes back to Judge Humphrey's question.
Because what evidence do we have here that he fell asleep because of a risk inherent with his job versus any other situation that people get into on a daily basis?
We know it's a strenuous job.
But he's also accustomed to doing that strenuous job.
He said it's
no different from normal.
It's no different. Well, it was no different from his other days, but that doesn't mean it's not a strenuous job.
I understand, but people that are used to doing a strenuous job are more accustomed to it, and it might affect them differently than if he had primarily administrative duties and then was thrown into the field.
Yes, Judge. More accustomed to it, but that doesn't mean he's immune to being tired and falling asleep.
But did he testify that it was strictly because of what happened at work and how strenuous my day was that I fell asleep and was tired?
He said that he was driving home and he fell asleep. That's basically his testimony.
And how is that enough?
I believe that it is because it's a risk of his employment. He's operating a vehicle, he's on the road, and he fell asleep.
So what about the person that's used to working 16-hour days at a law firm and falls asleep on the way home, and they say, well, it's no different than any other typical day of mine. I worked 16 hours, and they hadn't fallen asleep the last 3 months working at that law firm. Is your position the same as that?
I think I would argue that that's compensable.
Each day
is going to be different. The human body is going to be affected differently. If I'm working 16 hours a day and I'm going home, I may think I'm used to that, but that day it may affect me and I fall asleep. So it becomes
the defense's burden to establish that it could not have come from any other means. It simply becomes a presumption that if you fall asleep in the course of your employment, it essentially is out of the course?
I'm not arguing for a presumption. I think there are sufficient facts that we can find here that he fell asleep in the course of his employment and arose out of the course of his employment. As I said, each case is particular, and I don't think it shifts the burden.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your argument.
I would like to remind counsel